The reading is from the first book of Samuel, chapter 8, beginning at the fourth verse. So all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah, and they said to him, "You are old, and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now appoint a king to lead us, such as all the other nations have." But when they said, "Give us a king to lead us," this displeased Samuel. So he prayed to the Lord, and the Lord told him, "Listen to all that the people are saying to you. It is not you they have rejected as their king, but me. As they have done from the day I brought them up out of Egypt until this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so they are doing to you. Now listen to them, but warn them solemnly, and let them know that what the king who will reign over them will do." Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking him for a king. He said, "This is what the king who will reign over you will do. He will take your sons and make them serve with his chariots and horses, and they will run in front of his chariots. Some he will assign to be commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties, and others to plow his ground and reap his harvest, and still others to make weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the rest of your fields and vineyards and olive groves and give them to his attendants. He will take a tenth of your grain and of your vintage and give it to his officials and attendants, your men servants and maid servants and the best of your cattle and donkeys he will take for his own use. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his slaves. When that day comes, you will cry out for relief from the king you have chosen, and the Lord will not answer you in that day." But the people refused to listen to Samuel. "No," they said, "we want a king over us. Then we will be like all the other nations, with a king to lead us and to go out before us and fight our battles." When Samuel heard all that the people said, he repeated it before the Lord. The Lord answered, "Listen to them and give them a king." Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
The gospel this morning is from St. Mark, chapter 15, commencing at verse 1.
Praise and glory to God.
In the early morning, the chief priests with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the whole Sanhedrin reached a decision. They bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. "Are you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate. "Yes, it is said as you say," Jesus replied. The chief priests accused him of many things, so again Pilate asked him, "Aren't you going to answer? See how many things they are accusing you of." But Jesus still made no reply, and Pilate was amazed. Now it was the custom at the feast to release a prisoner whom the people requested. A man called Barabbas was in prison with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the uprising. The crowd came up and asked Pilate to do for them what he usually did. "Do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?" asked Pilate, knowing it was out of envy that the chief priests had handed Jesus over to him. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have Pilate release Barabbas instead. "What shall I do then with the one you call the king of the Jews?" Pilate asked them. "Crucify him," they shouted. "Why? What crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him." Wanting to satisfy the crowd, Pilate released Barabbas to them. He had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. This is the gospel of Christ.
Praise to Christ the Lord.
One of the more impressive buildings in Switzerland is the Federal House in Bern, where the Swiss Parliament, both the upper and lower chambers, and the Swiss government are housed. In other words, it is something like Parliament buildings and beehive in one. There's no playground just outside the federal house, but there's a water feature where children like to play in summer. I remember one particular time in winter when there was a light show which was projected against the walls of the federal house. It recounted some of the history of Switzerland, its relationship with its neighbors, and it also celebrated its successes. The federal house is still somewhat nicer to see by daylight. As you stand in front of the house, you can see the statues and large letters, the Latin phrase, Curia Confederationis Helveticae, in other words, the Parliament of the Swiss Confederation. Completed in 1902, this was still a time when old Latin phrases were frequently quoted by the educated and used as inscriptions on and in houses. Inside the federal house, there are several inscriptions as well. Probably the most well-known says, Unus pro omnibus, omnes pro uno, or one for all and all for one. I couldn't find a photo for another important inscription, which is apparently somewhere in the federal house, but less prominent. It reads, Hominum confusione de providentia Helvetia regitur, which translates as, by human confusion and God's providence, Switzerland is directed. Some, mainly Swiss theologians, have used this phrase to also explain the history not just of Switzerland, but of Israel, of the church, and of the world. I actually think that it is a good description that can guide our thinking about world events, about history. And yes, I think that it helps us in relating biblical accounts to our own time. And in a sense, it is a good summary of part of the biblical witness. But then the phrase should probably be adjusted to read the following. Hominum confusione et de providentia orbis regitur, or by human confusion and God's providence, the world is directed. I think that this also applies to the books of Samuel, particularly to today's reading. The people of Israel were concerned about their leadership, which up to that stage had been somewhat haphazard. Often Israel had judges in various parts of the country. And these were often seen as anointed by God to lead for a particular time and a particular purpose. While those judges sometimes did their duty faithfully, at times they went somewhat off the rails, so to say. And we read in our reading today that the current contenders for judges, the sons of Samuel, did not have the confidence of the people. And so the people looked for a solution, and the general feeling was that they wanted a king, such as all the other nations have. Now, I think that's not a totally new idea, the looking for solutions that are in vogue somewhere else. It has all been all too common throughout history as well, and certainly also in the life of the church. After all, in the Middle Ages, bishops became something like counts or lords, with entitlements to tax and with large holdings. In more recent years, the church has looked at the commercial world for leadership models and for marketing its services, so to say. Now, I think recently that has changed somewhat to also consider more leadership models and practices from the not-for-profit sector. It also has to be said that the not-for-profit sector has also been influenced by church practice. I think the idea of a king had some merit, at least so it seemed to the people in Israel. Through a king, Israel would have stable leadership. And yet, the kingship model is not what God intended for Israel. That is even more so because the idea of what a king was or should be was so influenced by the examples they saw around them. And so Samuel warned the people of all the negative consequences of having a king. A king would extract possessions from the people. A king would force their sons and daughters to work for him, not for the family farm. Yes, even they themselves would become the king's servants. Painting that picture of a king, Samuel portrays the danger. Of course, he also says that it is not how a king of Israel should act. The prophets also refer to this image of a king as a warning and say that it does not need to be so, but that too often the kings of Israel and Judah have fallen into temptation to become a king like a king of the nations around them. I think this desire to be such a king came from what we might term human confusion. Confusion does not mean malice or evil, but it does mean the mixing of good and evil, the confusion of what leads to health and what leads to destruction. And that is the human predicament that in God's good creation, with so many joys around them, humans nevertheless, in their ignorance, concern and malice, make decisions that go against God's good purposes. After all, the road to hell is often paved with good intentions. We humans, even in our best times, are still beings that have fallen away from God and have fallen out with our fellow humans. That's why so often we fall also into our desire for more. Our pursuit of wealth for wealth's sake, of knowledge for knowledge's sake, of power for power's sake, of pleasure for pleasure's sake, of honor for honor's sake, of safety for safety's sake. These are all part of our human longing for self-improvement, but also in a sense they are pointless and even destructive. Samuel warns that a king's pursuit of more grandeur, more luxury, more territory, more security, that this pursuit will hurt first of all the people. Now, I think we should not gloat too much that we in today's democracy are less confused than Israel in its monarchy. When we see not only the political scandals, but some of the expediency and division that our political system generates, then I think we need to be humble. Because it is not just in Switzerland, but also in New Zealand and the rest of the world, that we see all too clearly evidence of that human confusion. And yet, despite all this confusion, there are also bright spots in our history and in our governance. Sometimes they come through human endeavor, sometimes through processes we cannot fully describe. Now, at the risk of being somewhat contentious and placing myself as a judge of political decisions, I might try and give one example. I think, for example, that the ACC system is a political outcome that has brought significant benefits to New Zealand society. Now, from a theoretically pure perspective, it should not exist. It is not in line with the market economy, and it is not really a fully socialist system. It is not fully left or right, and from our legal tradition, it is unprincipled. And yet somehow, through shortcomings, reports, and confusion, it came to be. I think it has benefited many. I think it has also many faults. It has injustices, and it is not always delivered well. And it has been partly deformed from its original intentions. But in comparison to what I have experienced around the world, it is a model of conflict resolution and of care. Even in its fractured form, it may be an indication of God's providence. Now, while that is an example of how better health outcomes may come from confusion, we also know that often people turn to God in exactly the more difficult times, when human confusion is most evident. We know from the Bible that God did use the kings of Israel and Judah for God's purposes, even in their constant disobedience. The kings became part of God's dealings with Israel. They were meant to keep the people of God focused on justice, to keep the people faithful and away from the corrupting influences of idols. They were meant to make the people distinctive in the world and yet also involved in the world around them. In the better days, the kings did exactly that. In their worst days, they went even beyond the direst warnings of Samuel. We all know that King David became a focus of messianic promises. King David, who had so many faults, and yet who also composed the most magnificent psalms. And through that, King David pointed to Jesus. In providence, God used the confused human demand for a king to point to what true kingship should be. The image of king can also be applied to Jesus, but only if it is radically modified. Just as the prophets of Israel, so Jesus also rejected the model of kingship that leads to king amassing more and more. Jesus told his disciples, "You know what that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles, they lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." In today's gospel reading, we read how Pilate asked Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Yes, it is as you say," Jesus answered. "For he is the king of the Jews, the king of Israel, the one to whom all the previous kings have been pointing to." But through Jesus, kingship is radically redefined. By the end of the reading, we hear how Jesus was flogged and was handed over to be crucified. That is the true king. That is the king who all other kings and rulers have never been able to be. For Jesus is the very expression of love. Through his self-giving love, it is clear that he lived his life for others, even though he is their king. Of course, there have been leaders who sacrificed much for others. And yet, as Christians, we confess that Jesus was not only one among many good leaders, or even the best of them, but rather that through his life, through his death and resurrection, we have been reconciled to God and have been saved from the powers of sin and destruction. In our reading, we read the strange reversal that the king who does not rebel with force against the empire is crucified, and instead a violent insurrectionist who had taken up arms was freed. In a sense, the empire knew that the way of Jesus is more threatening than an armed insurrection. For armed force can always be met with more armed force. But the kingdom of Jesus subverts all the ways of the empire. For the empire is built exactly on lording it over each other and getting more at the expense of others. In a sense, the cruel empire that Pilate represented is just one of the many examples of humanity's confusion, but one that is even more explicitly leaning towards evil and away from God's good purposes. As the true king, Jesus also overcame this empire. But more, he opened a way of life for us that leads to wholeness, to restored relationships with God, with each other, and the world around us. Yes, this king also asks for all our trust and all our loyalty, and possibly even for our possessions, but not to lord it over us. Rather, Jesus gives us forgiveness and healing, assurance and purpose, May we also follow the true King, Jesus, through whom we see God's faithfulness and God's goodness. Amen.